Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Sarah Silverman on stand-up comedy, her new film, Battle of the Sexes, and a brand new TV show, I Love You, America. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. I Love You, America, just for context, is the name of the show. I mean, I do love you, America, but that's the name of the show. It can get confusing. Anyway, hi guys, my name is Josh Horowitz. Sammy is not with us this week. She is on assignment. That doesn't really mean anything. I'm just saying it because it sounds cool. Don't worry, she'll be back soon enough. But I'm taping the intro solo this week just to give you a little context. This is with one of my favorite funny people on the planet, Sarah Silverman. This is a chat that runs the gamut. We talk stand-up, we talk acting, we talk politics. Because Sarah, you know, her life and career have run the gamut. She's kind of... I wouldn't say dipped her toe in many things because it's more than that. Her acting career alone is very impressive, and Battle of the Sexes is her newest film. She is a key supporting player alongside Emma Stone and Steve Carell in that wonderful retelling of the Billie Jean King, Bobby Riggs match. Make sure to check that out. She is, of course, one of the best stand-ups out there, and her new special is on Netflix. It is called A Speck of Dust. Check that out. And last, but certainly not least, is a new show for Hulu. I confess, I have not seen the show yet because as I tape this in advance, yes, I'm on vacation, guys, the show has not debuted yet. So you might have seen the show already. So if you haven't seen the show, check it out. It's called I Love You, America. It is on Hulu. It is a weekly series, 10 episodes, a mixture of kind of field pieces and in-studio comedy. And to hear Sarah tell it, this is going to reflect very much herself, which is that unique blend of smart, sincere, and silly that I love. Sounds like a very much a passion project for Sarah. So I myself am curious about that, and if you're a fan of hers, you should definitely check it out. This conversation, we touched on a great many things, whether it's the health scare that Sarah experienced last year, in which it was one of these random things. She went into the hospital, not even went to the hospital, saw a doctor for like a random, thing in her throat. And it turned into like going into the ER and being put into like a kind of a semi-coma. It was a pretty serious thing. And she's very candid about that, as well as the loss of her mom and Gary Shandling and Harris Whittles, three people that were very important to her in the last couple of years. So, this can be a heavy talk, but a fun talk. She's always somebody that can kind of go back and forth between those two, extremes, and I really enjoyed catching up with her. She's somebody that I've known a great many years, and to talk to her about the many varied experiences of her career was really a lot of fun. So without any further ado, I'm going to keep it brief since Sammy's not here to entertain you all, and just dive right into this conversation with one of my favorites, Sarah Silverman. Are you in the middle right now of like production on the show?
Yeah.
So give me a sense. I'm very curious about, this is going to be a Hulu show. This is I Love You, America is the title.
Yeah.
I don't know much more about it than that.
And nobody does. And it's so funny because every time I see a write-up about it, I'm like, wrong. But I also don't know how to explain. I don't know how people are going to infer it.
Right.
But I can tell you what it is to me.
That's a starting point. Let's go there.
It's a half hour.
Okay.
I guess late night show, but you can watch it anytime you want.
Right.
I do a monologue. It's not like three jokes. It's like I just write a, it's a kind of a long somal stream of consciousness, but specific. Mm-hmm. There's a reason for it. And then that usually goes into something ridiculous. And there'll be a field piece, either by me or by, like, Tig Notaro does one, Aparna Nancherla does one, like, a lot of cool people. And I wouldn't say that it's political. I think it's, like, social politics. It's about, like, the division of this country, and it's not about, like, what happened today at all. It's not totally evergreen, but it's of this moment in time, for sure.
I'm curious about, like, the development of a show like this. Like, were you looking to develop a show, and then this come in the wake of 2016 and all the fun election stuff, or were you already kind of hard at work on this idea?
I wanted to do this. Like, the last acting pilot I did, I was like, oh, man, this isn't what I want to do. Like, I do love acting, but I don't want to be on a show that just goes on indefinitely and takes up all my time. Like, I want to do other things. Yeah. I want to dip my toe into the acting.
Right.
I like doing that. But I really want to just do whatever I want to do.
Yeah.
And...
and this lets you scratch a few different kind of itches. This is
They've given me only very thoughtful, helpful notes, but nothing crazy.
Yeah,
it's rated R. Mm-hmm. It's anything I want. Definitely am seeing, like, feeling my boundaries, and, you know, does that make for better comedy? Not necessarily, but it's. I'm into it, you know? It's everything I want it to be, but I don't know how to explain it other than maybe you could say it's social politics served in a big, bready sandwich of aggressively stupid.
Right.
Which is my favorite.
Yes. Because you've always had and I love this about you, a true, unabashed love of poop humor and really just silly, stupid stuff.
Yes, I love, like, just aggressively dumb.
Yeah. So is that unique in your family, or is that a Silverman family trait? Do the others look down upon you for your embracing of poop? And
no, not at all. No, the Silverman clan is pretty on the same page comedically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So and does this one, I mean, did you ever have interest or aspiration of, like, to think, like, the more traditional late night hosting kind of thing? That was never something that, like, you wanted to...
I've been asked about it before, but I've seen I know the inner workings of a late night talk show, and it's magical. I'm in awe of it.
Yeah.
But it's just not the lifestyle for me. I mean, this show's been all-encompassing, and we're doing 10 of them, you know? Like,
right.
It's just, like, every waking hour of my day is working on it, but I love it.
Yeah.
But, like, with a talk show, you're working all night, all day. You finally shoot the show. You get that feeling of, like, completion for about 8 seconds, and then the stress of the next show kicks in. And that's just not really my optimum happiness.
Mm-hmm. Wait, are you working with Gavin Purcell?
Yeah,
I know Gavin because Gavin. We tried to lure Gavin when we were developing. I was developing a show, like a movie talk show, and he was very nice. He's always been very nice about my work as well. So I know he's giving my best. Would you
he's
see
so
him?
Positive.
He is.
Yeah,
which probably fits in well with you. I consider you a positive person.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
I mean, I have my moments, but I am able to keep myself in check.
Yeah.
Fairly well.
So and this was a good in the field pieces. You got to travel. I would think
I went to Chalmette, Louisiana, and Mineola, Texas. A lot of, like, Trump country places, just to be connect on a human level.
Yeah.
And I had family dinner in Chalmette and with a family that all voted for Trump and had never met a Jew. And it was great. It was really fun.
Now, do you find that, like, your comedy kind of transcends the state? Like, can you play any state and find a welcome audience, or do you feel oh, here comes the mail. There's mail outside. Should we open my mail? No, it's not.
Do you want to get your mail?
No, I don't want my mail. It's probably, it's crappy swag. You see next to you, this is all the...
Crappy swag.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't want that.
It does kind of become a burden.
Well, except for the slinky. The slinky, I consider, that's like great swag.
It's fun for a girl or a boy.
I like slinkies as an adult male. Sorry. So, I guess just like playing anywhere throughout the states. Is that something enjoyable?
Well, yeah,
or do you know where your kind of like bread and butter is and...
I guess, like, I'm at a point where when I have a show in some town, people who are interested in seeing me
It's self-selective. They know.
You know, but I do. I mean, that is something about, you know, when politicians use that Hollywood elite, you know, marker. It's, first of all, I feel it's just a sneaky...
A code word for something else.
For Jews. Yeah, obviously. But there is, where there is like liberal bubbleness, I do believe, and I've been a part of that, and I can be a part of that. I did want to get out of that. But also, as a comedian, you get this kind of other life where you're traveling the country, and your job is to make, entertain people.
Sure.
And there are all sorts of different people all over the country. So in that way, I think... We're kind of good people to be the connective tissue in such a divided country.
Yeah. So give me a sense. Well, first, before even the election, I was curious. Have you made that great speech at the Democratic convention, which had to be a moment for you. And like, it was a big moment in terms of appealing to the Bernie crowd, of which some were, you know, not ready to kind of make the switch. And was
it's just, odd to me. I still, every once in a while, get people angry. You're ridiculous, Sarah. You're being ridiculous, you know, whatever. I'm like, all right. You know, I mean, if you love Bernie so much, then you would vote for Hillary. That's what he's asking you to do. He wants an ally in office, you know? I mean, I spoke at that DNC because he asked me to, you know? I love Bernie, you know, I did it for him, and I, you know, and obviously I voted for Hillary, but it was, you know, you don't see what I'm seeing standing there. It's just an ocean of mostly bananas people
right.
that go to, you know, with their styrofoam hats and 1,000 pins on them,
right.
and they were the Bernie or bust people, which are just... It's weird. If you love Bernie, then why don't you want to help him? It's so odd. It's like a very weird kind of misplaced passion and anger. But they were just in the Hillary people's faces screaming. And it was just, you couldn't even hear yourself talk. I know I was at home. You could hear me.
Yeah. Were you surprised that level of, I mean, you.
Well, that's, first of all, we had set our parts and then we were supposed to, introduce Paul Simon, and then the stage manager was like, stretch! We're on live TV. I had so much I wanted to say that I had to cut out of my speech for time, and then, of course, none of it was, like, available in my brain. And then after a while, I told Al, I was like, I just literally, in my mind, just posed for still pictures. Like, I just looked as pretty as I could for a few beats. And then it was just so insane in front of me that I was like, look, you guys are being ridiculous. I mean, I meant it the way, you know, and so many Hillary people were like, that was amazing, yeah. And I'm not saying I'm not a Hillary person. My whole family is. Only my mom and I were Bernie people. But obviously I wanted her to win and I voted for her. But it was just like, I didn't do it. I did it because these people in front of my face were being ridiculous.
Right. That wasn't on the agenda. It was a reaction more than an actual.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what was your, you know, we've had months of analysis now post-election on like what it all means. And I think we feel like we're going to still be like talking about this for decades to come, like what the election of Trump meant in terms of was it
I think
a thousand things. What do you, what's your take on it?
And
I'm
sorry.
No, go ahead.
Aw, that was rude, Sarah. Let someone finish a sentence.
I had nothing. It's okay.
I have a couple takes on it. One, I think as Democrats, we need to look inward. You can't expect change to happen without you looking inside yourself on a micro and macro level. I mean, look at the weeks leading up to the election. We were all like, well, the Republican Party is going to have to really figure out who they are. They're having such an identity crisis. And then the election happened and we realized we were looking in the mirror.
Yeah.
You know, we got our smug smiles wiped right off our faces. And if we don't use that as a learning moment, you know, then we're being silly,
yeah.
You know? And in terms of Trump's popularity or him getting elected, however legal or illegal that was, he really is just the white head that has accrued over, you know, decades of the right behaving in a very short-term, band-aids on things, making the rich richer, wealth addiction. I mean, it's spread all over the country where people are raised, children are raised to respect rich people at any cost, no matter how they got their money.
Right.
I wasn't raised that way, and I don't think that that's healthy, you know, and I think it's created a country and a mentality of respecting rich people because they're rich. And then there are rich people, billionaires. There are great ones. Look, everyone likes money. That's fine. It's about addiction, in my view. Like, there are rich people like Bill Gates or whatever who want to make the world a better place. They still enjoy their wealth, but
right.
But then there are wealth addicts. And I think Trump and the people he surrounds himself with are codependent wealth addicts. No different than crack cocaine. They are so addicted to wealth, to greed, to money, more.
And that can blot out reason. And
well, what do crackheads do when they're addicted to crack? They'd sell their grandmother for more crack. That's what they're doing. They're selling the health and well-being of American citizens in pursuit of what? Something that is just an unfillable hole of wealth, of money. So, yeah, what I mean by addict is they lose sight of any morality in pursuit of more money that will do nothing for them and hurt the people, their constituents. And then the people who voted for him, he lied to. And they wanted change, and they weren't being paid attention to by the Democrats. The Democrats are supposed to be the party of the people, the party of the working class, and they haven't been for a long time. And that's something that has to change when the pendulum swings the other way. It's happening in the UK, too, with the Labour Party. Mm. They are not representing the working class. They do all this globalization without the... knowing they know what's going to happen. People are going to lose their steelworks jobs, their, you know, their mining jobs, that all these jobs that are American factory jobs with no backup plan on how to subsidize them. So
there's so much to be like.
My show isn't about this, though.
No, I
know. If it is, it's just a little taste served with a big sugary.
Well, I mean, is the show in some ways for you personally kind of a antidote to kind of like the negativity and the way we can, I mean, I find myself wallowing in a lot of this stuff day to day, and you're trying to find on a human level, on a personal connection level, maybe not a silver lining, but ways to kind of like talk about this stuff in maybe not like a granular level, but more of a, I don't even know, sociological level.
Yes. Yeah. And I do hope to connect with people that are not just preaching to the choir. You know, there are so many shows, and there's shows that I am huge fans of that are brilliant, but they're not changing minds. Now, I'm not saying my show's going to change minds, but what I have learned doing this is facts don't change people's minds. Facts, polls, this, that. It's never going to change someone's mind. Arguing, making point after point, that doesn't change people's minds. It just gets their porcupine needles up.
Yeah.
And then they're paralyzed and they're not open to change at all. They double down on this house of cards of their beliefs. And we all do that, right? So the only thing that makes people change is feelings. As corny as that sounds, you know what I mean? And I always say the same thing to the writers in the writer's room. even with the talking about the most ridiculous, silly things, that if it's mentionable, it's manageable. That's what Mr. Rogers says. And it is really true. And so I love saying anything I want, words, nudity, all the stuff on the show, and just exploring what it does to us emotionally.
Right. I want to talk about also, I just watched the stand-up special. I was a little late to the game, but it's a great one, A Speck of Dust on Netflix. And you dedicated it to three people you've lost in the last few years. So it's been three people
in 2 years, and almost myself.
I was going to say, it's been a lot's happened. And probably the last time I spoke to you was like for I Smile Back, which was in the midst of like losing your mom, as I recall, timeline-wise, right? So that had to be...
That was just Harris and my mom, pre-Gary, yeah.
Crazy. So, and then, yeah, you went through this crazy random health crisis last year. You have to come out of all of that. Each of those things is a traumatic event, yet, let alone four of these traumatic events, if you include your own health issues, with some differing views on mortality, I don't know, your place in the universe, just like priorities. Do you feel like you've kind of shifted?
I'm changed. I get not easily changed, but I like to let myself be changed. This really took the steering wheel and changed me in lots of ways. It's funny because when my mom died, Gary told me this Buddhist quote, you know, grief, teach me what I have to learn, you know, And also, another fun fact thing that I think people can hear and go, whoa, is like my sister, Susie, my oldest sister, the rabbi, after my mom died, she didn't cry for like 2 weeks, and she just didn't know what was wrong with her that she didn't cry. Mm. She was so ready to, and we all were. And then she got an email from a friend of hers that said, you don't think you're grieving, but you are. And like that made her burst into tears. Not that that was the antidote to that, but just you cannot control what form grief takes in your body. And, you know, I started to learn like, listen, I'm just going to live my life. I'll still, you know, maybe laugh in a few minutes. I might, you know, forget for a moment. I might all these things. But, you know, yeah, you're going to be like in line at Vaughn's when it hits you and there's nothing you can do about it.
So was it a quick recovery after it was like an abscess, I guess?
For you,
in terms of that. And like, where did you put your priorities or like life in the weeks after that kind of hit?
Well, first of all, I went back to work way too soon. I did an episode of Crashing 3 weeks out of the ICU. But you know what? If you're going to go to work way too soon, do it with like your
Pete
favorite
Davidson, yeah.
people. And your, you know, I was like, behind the scenes and in front of the camera, some of my closest friends.
Sure.
And they were literally, I mean, one of the producers, Dave Rath, who I've known forever, was like, because they say, like, hold someone's hand, grab someone's arm when you walk, because you're not better, you know? Like,
right.
And I'm so healthy right now, but it took 5 weeks after out of the ICU, I died in pregnancy, during pregnancy on a TV show, and just lying there and having like the hospital noises was just, it's very haunting. But, it takes a while. They put so much opioids in my body because I couldn't be put to sleep. So they had to just medicate me into a semi-coma and tie my hands down. And they say every hour you're on opioids?
I think the latter.
Heroin,
I'm not
going to use it. It's heroin. For every hour you're on it, it's a week before it can get out of your system. So I've got another like year and a half before that, you know, 7 days of being on so much heroin that I didn't feel them cutting my throat open.
I mean, that stuff is obviously necessary to what you needed. Like, what was your attitude about kind of like, were you sketched out by the fact that they had to like load you up on those kind of drugs?
I had no choice. It all happened so fast.
Right.
I went to my doctor for a sore throat, and the next thing I knew, I was in the emergency room and they were prepping for surgery and drugging me just for that part. So poor my on again, off again lover, Michael Sheehan, and my manager, Amy's V, they were the ones who were told, you know, she has a 50-50 chance of making it out of this surgery alive. I was fine. I had no idea.
Can we talk about Gary for a little bit?
Yeah, please.
I just talked about
money addicts. He's the one who turned me on to that. He's the one who said that it was like...
Not for himself, but stuff that he saw around him.
He was talking about the government. This is like a year before the bank crisis. And he said, our government's being run by money addicts, by addicts, you know? And he said, and so we can't be surprised... You know, it's as if we're giving a bunch of cocaine addicts a mountain of cocaine and saying, distribute this evenly among your people.
Yeah.
And I always remembered that, and every day I think about it more and more, just how right on he was.
So it's fair to say his influence was beyond just comedy for you.
Yeah.
I mean, was the first interaction, was that on Larry Sanders, or had you...
No.
Known him even prior to that.
I met him, my friend Dave Rath, whose arm I held when I did Crashing. He's an old friend for forever. And he was playing basketball at Gary's. I was 24. And he took me there. I play basketball, and I had played with Rath, so he took me. And Gary right away was so nice. And for the next... 21 years I played basketball at Gary's every Sunday. It's funny, he's 21 years older than me, so it was from the day I met him to the day he died, I went from, he was 45 when I met him and I was 45 when he died.
Oh wow. Are you part of, I just saw Judd Apatow recently.
Yes.
He's working on this like insane documentary. I assume you're part of that.
I am. And yeah. It's funny. I mean, it doesn't matter. The documentary is going to be amazing, but the day I went in, I still was so not in touch with my grief. I didn't want to go back and look at emails between us. It's really hard because Gary is so supportive, you know. I know that Judd told me, Sacha Baron Cohen said the same thing, where Judd said, will you share emails he's written? And I thought about it, and, you know, I normally would, but they're all so... complimentary and praising,
right.
And you know, like, because that's who he was. That's what he did for so many people. He gave us all confidence until we were actually able to do the things he believed in us that we could do, you know? So it's just, I was embarrassed, you know? It looks obnoxious. And Judd said, that's funny. That's exactly what Sacha said, you know, because he was so giving emotionally, you know, he was so supportive and watched everything I did, you know, more than like my family. I mean, just watched it. Just, I remember Sacha, we were at a party not long ago, and Sacha said, who's gonna be our Gary? And I said, no, we have to be other people's Gary.
You're
now.
The cheerleaders now. You're
yeah.
the coaches. Do you have a sense of that? I mean, having now, you know, I was looking, and I think it's been 20 years. This past July was your late night comedy debut on Letterman, I think, according to scattered records. July 97. Does that sound right?
On Letterman, probably. But I had done Conan.
Had you? That was your first of the.
Yeah, Conan was like. The first time I got recognized was like because I was doing Conan a lot.
Nice.
He just had me on. He never made me do stand-up on the show. I always just did my stand-up from the panel.
Yeah.
And he had me on so many times. And so it was like, were you on Conan? I was like, it was the first time I was recognized. It was always from Conan.
So he's more of a contemporary, like age-wise, he's a little older, but like he's
Conan. Yeah.
Yeah. So is it a different deal when you do someone like a Letterman?
Yeah.
Back then?
Terror.
I would think.
Total terror because I worship him so much and just he added. So much to my life and my interest. And I mean, staying up to watch Letterman every night was like my reason for living. That sounds, you know, trite, but truly, like, could not wait till 12:30.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of people have felt this, like, much like Jon Stewart missing in the last year. Mm. I feel like we all missed the kind of Dave in terms of just beyond the comedy. He was just, he became this elder statesman that kind of, like, was just speaking truth to power in a, like, a really profound way.
And I love that. That's when he's at his best.
Yeah, when he's riled up with a Bill O'Reilly, etc.
Like, yeah, or like, I mean, in the old days with GE.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Ugh.
So I want to talk a little bit about the acting side, which you said, you know, you said you had done a pilot a couple years ago or something?
Yeah, and it was great. I loved it. And I've done a myriad pilots.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it's funny. I do want to do it. It's not like, you know, I did like, but then I thought each time I'd go, oh man, it really takes up all your time and that, you know,
especially a series, like you're saying.
A series does. Like, I love doing a part in a movie, 4 days on this, you know, and a little arc on this, or, you know, I like all sorts of the mediums and everything. And, but I just don't think I could ever, like, I'm in awe of, like, Mariska Hargitay.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, she's given decades of her life to Law and Order.
And it's probably like 9 or 10 months a year doing it, like, just 22 episodes
those
a year.
Those one-hour shows, and it's all her.
Yeah.
Like, that's just not the life I can live. I mean, I think she finds happiness in it, and she's figured it out, and she has, I mean, a relationship and children. Like, I can't even imagine how to do that. I'm old, and I still look at my, like, spare bedroom and I go, okay, so if I had a kid, I would put like a bed in that and I'd buy it clothes and I'd buy it food and I would like find a school for it.
Right.
And I'd just like love it. I'd clean up its shit and stuff. But I really like it. I'm in awe of how that comes so easily to people. I don't know. I love kids.
Do you have a dog now?
Yeah.
You're a dog person, I know.
Yeah.
So is that the ideal kind of lifestyle? Your on again, off again lover.
Yes.
A little ways
I'm
away.
See him next week.
A little bit of a long distance thing. He's back in Wales, right?
Yeah. Oh, he's actually shooting in London. He's doing the Neil Gaiman.
Oh yeah,
Good
which
Omens.
I saw John Hamm's now a part of it. I saw.
Yeah, they were just together.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Which of the Underworld films made you fall in love with Michael Sheen?
I saw the one his origin story one in Spanish one night. And I don't feel like I missed much.
No.
Because it's really just about his shiny abs and his, like, kind of dreads, I think.
Mm-hmm. And Kate's tight leather. That tells the entire story.
Totally.
He is, though, one of the finest actors out there.
Yes, he is. Know how I know? He told me.
He remind you every night before bed, by the way.
I'm one of the greatest actors of our time.
A soft whisper in your ear.
Well, sometimes at night I'd go, say Shakespeare. And I go, I'm not your monkey. I go, no, I know. You must not remember it. It's a lot. And he goes, he's so easy to manipulate. I love it. Sometimes he got mad at me recently and he said the funniest thing. Sometimes he just, I don't know what. He goes, you're fake news. I know. Like,
cuts you to the core.
Thing I ever heard in my life. He called me fake news.
It should be noted, though, on the acting tip, you're in Battle of the Sexes. It's a great role in a great film. So so that kind of fit. I mean, that's a no-brainer. You're working with some talented directors.
So fun.
Playing a real person. Is that your first time? Have you played real people before?
No.
That's something. That's different.
That's something. I loved it because Billie Jean was like, you were Gladys. And I was like, oh, I'm so glad because I had nothing to go on but like a picture.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I met her daughter.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So what? I am somewhat surprised, though, in the wake of especially I Smile Back, which you got such great reviews for, and it's a great film if people haven't seen it. I mean, it's a tough sit, but it's worth checking out.
Yeah.
Like, did you find that there were?
We should add like a laugh track to the DVD of it.
You should.
Is
there a blooper reel on it?
You guys should be.
Yeah.
And I'm like crying and masturbating next to my sleeping daughter's bed, like. God. The boom comes into the shot. Ah! This guy.
Everything's funnier when you add a fart noise, track.
Do you have the app Pocket Studio Audience?
No, tell me.
You'll love it so much.
I think it's self-explanatory.
It's self-explanatory.
That's amazing. But did new opportunities not come about after that? Did you not find that there were some interesting...
they did.
Yeah.
I did a couple movies.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do, I'm so proud of that movie, but I have no desire to do anything like that again.
As satisfying as it wasn't necessarily.
It was. It was an amazing experience. Got it.
Check it off the list.
It was an amazing experience, and I'm so proud of it, but it's bleak as fuck, yeah. You know? And, I'm not dying. I'm not, you know, look, I'm 46. I'm not, like, looking to get discovered.
Right.
I love acting. I think I'm good at it. But I don't want to spend all my time doing it because I have a million other things I want to do, you know?
Well, and it's interesting because
I feel sometimes it's imprisoning. If it just goes on forever, yeah. And it's like 14 hours a day and I can't even do stand-up because I'm so tired. I got to race home to... This is not me complaining, obviously. I'm living the dream. But right now, when I'm working all day, all night, and I'm exhausted, then I check in with myself. I go, no, I'm living the. This is the dream because I love this show.
Well, and also, I mean, going back to stand-up, I mean, I have a feeling if we talk in 20 or 30 years, you're still going to consider yourself first and foremost a stand-up.
Of course.
That's what you wanted to be. That was the dream.
Yeah. I mean, Joan Rivers... she said she didn't feel like she really came into her own as a stand-up until she was 70. And that's my hope, you know. I want to always be changing.
Do you feel like you're on, like, the right kind of, like, cycle in terms of, like, I don't know how often you try to put out a special? Is it every...
I never think about
it. It's not like every two or 3 years I need to put out.
Between my first and my second was 10 years, and that was just because it never... I'm not built to, like, make money or generate momentum. I would have just kept my head down and done... there probably could have been 3 specials in between there, but I just do stand-up.
Yeah.
And then someone, Netflix or, no, HBO at the time, they were like, you want to do a special? I go, oh, I do have a special, yeah. I didn't think about it. And then a few years later, Netflix and I was ready again, but I never have pursued it or been like... I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to challenge myself and write one this year and book it at the end of this year. So I have to, which is admirable. I don't plan anything out.
I mean, how does a special then, whether it's on like a specific time frame or it sounds like it's not, come together? Like, are you kind of constantly just trying new shit out? And at some point it kind of coalesces into like a bit of a narrative or like how did...
Yeah, I just do stand up. I do spots whenever, you know, in LA and then in New York. And then if I go like, oh, I think I might have something. Say someone goes, do you want to do a special? And I go, I think I do have a special. Then I'll like come to New York or even not. If I have a chunk of time, a month, 2 months, I'll just come to New York and be a comic because I don't like being both. I like to either be sleeping in the day and up at night or... up and working in the day and sleeping at night because I need at least 12 hours of sleep where I'm not myself. Okay, but at least 7.
When you think back to the first days of doing stand-up, is that kind of like a romanticized time in terms of like how great it was kind of like that, you know, getting into that weird kind of lifestyle and finding your friends and finding your peer group?
Totally. So special. Yeah. Friends for life. I mean, those are people that I'm almost all of them. I mean, so many of them I'm still just as close with.
And is that just literally time of your... Because it was that time in your life when we kind of, like, grab onto people and don't let go.
You meet your... You know, it's like you're like a freshman.
Yeah.
You know? And you meet all the other freshmen. You know, and Todd Barry and I used to, like, sit in the back of the Boston Comedy Club in hopes that somebody would cancel and they need us to do 10 minutes or, you know, just in case.
Did the people that you thought were, like, the most talented at the time end up becoming the successes that you thought? Is there a correlation between who you thought was, like, the most talented that have experienced the most success?
Yeah, I mean, some that were everyone's favorite, you know, became not famous. Mm. You know, it's...
And when you look at that, is that luck or just, like, or is it...
I think it's... We hold ourselves back sometimes, you know, and... When everyone is your biggest cheerleader and you're a little, people can get paralyzed with time, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Did you ever feel like you were kind of stuck in one place? Because it seems like throughout your career, you've always, as you said, kind of like tried out acting for a bit and kind of kept coming back and forth to that and developed TV shows, some that worked and some that didn't. It feels like you've always been
I've always been pretty open to
trying
opportunities when they come up, or like I get just as much. I love making videos on my couch straight to camera just as much as, you know, being in some hoity-toity movie or something.
How does social media treat you? Are you constantly having to block and mute people? Have you noticed an uptick in...
Oh, I will mute people sometimes. I try not to block people. The only person I've ever blocked is Donald Trump. But...
Are you still DMing Ivanka? Any response back?
Did I tell you that I DM'd Ivanka?
Yeah, I think you told Chelsea.
Oh, yeah. No, she never responded. I don't think she handles her own Twitter account. But I don't really look too much at mentions or anything. I try to just... I've gotten pretty good, if I look at all, to skim... I can tell by, like, the eagle or the death mask or the, you know... South Park character, God bless South Park, but it just tends to be a thing. I'm mostly exit only on the Twitter and Facebook. I've never been on Facebook. I only know how to post.
It's probably for stuff. The best.
So I don't know. I never see, you know, like I had to get security like a bunch of my last tours. But I would have never known to, except my manager looks at that stuff, and I'm not Britney Spears, so it like sucks to have to hire security at my own cost when I'm doing tours, because, you know, financially it's a burden, but I bring it on myself. I do understand that.
Is it a nice even split and breakdown between misogyny and anti-Semitism, or is it?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember early on, I spoke to you even before I got to MTV, and I remember I published an interview with you, and that spawned, I got like a fair share. No, it's fine.
My shit sticks to people.
But I find it fascinating.
My stink. Yeah.
I mean, I don't get much of it, so I multiply that by 1,000, I'm sure, is what you frankly
yeah
get.
I mean it's either I would say misplaced anger. I like to think that is manifest into you're a woman, you're a Jew, you're a liberal.
You've got the trifecta
in less kind terms.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's end on a positive note, which sounds like it's going to be your show. I'm excited to see it. So, I mean, you've been banking like all the field pieces, but you do like have a live to tape component soon.
Yeah, so we shoot starting a week from tomorrow. We shoot on Tuesdays and they get posted, you know, air on Thursdays.
And studio audience in LA, is that what you're
doing? Yeah.
Nice.
Just like 70 people, small, perfect. Intimate.
Amazing.
Loose.
It'll be slightly funnier than Handmaid's Tale on Hulu.
Oh, my God. Did you watch it?
Yeah. It's amazing.
Good. Amazing.
It was my entry point into Hulu. That, you know,
me too. I got Hulu so I could watch it.
Yeah.
And now they've got not just my show, but like J.J. Abrams has a show with Stephen King.
Yeah.
And Seth Rogen's got Future Man. And,
I'm excited for that one.
Oh, my God.
Speaking of stupid, that looks nice and
so
stupid
good.
For me. Yeah. Excellent.
And, yeah.
So a lot going on, just to list the amazing material. Speck of Dust, still out there on Netflix.
Huh.
Battle of the Sexes, now in a theater near you, hopefully. Or if not, it's expanding still.
Yeah,
and that's
right.
A great piece of work.
Expanding.
I Love You, America. I'll be there watching it myself. I can't wait to see what you've got in store for us.
Tomorrow
and
we're going to release a little promo song video.
Of course. Have you ever done a musical? You like to sing, don't you?
I do like to sing. I'm actually about 6 or 7 years into working on a musical that's about a year away.
Is that right?
And I can't believe the end is in sight.
So how's that going to manifest? Where's the, what's it going to be?
We're developing it at the Atlantic.
Amazing.
And it's based on my book, The Bedwetter, but it's just 1 year when I'm 10. So it's like a kind of R-rated musical that's mostly kids.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love it. As a former bedwetter myself, I'm looking forward to it.
Till how long?
It was sleepaway camp for me.
Me too.
That was really the trauma, and I feel like until 12 it was late. Yeah.
Sleepaway camp for me too.
Yeah, it was rough.
But like probably to like 15.
Oh, really? I hated sleepaway camp.
Oh, I hated it so much.
They made me swim twice a day.
I hated the swimming, too. It made me cry. It was so scary to me.
I wasn't the kind of boy that wanted to take a shirt off. It was just not fun.
Oh, doll.
Let's not end there. Okay. I love you, America.
I love you, America.
Is that how you say it on the show?
At the end of the show, I say, good night, America. I love you.
There you go. It's always good to see you, Sarah. And
likewise.
Good luck with the show. And the end.
We did it. Woo! Do, 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 do.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.